And we're back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air. For the past half an hour or so, I've been playing a recording of Sherry talking to a live audience, and I hope that got you in the mood for what we're going to be talking about tonight. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. And I want to do just a little recap if you're joining us for the first time. For the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about relationships and dissatisfaction, and that's been a lot of fun.
Yes, as much fun as, well, relationship people might think, yes, that's probably more fun than, say, dissatisfaction. Yeah. Although most of us who have had a relationship, at least one, know that those two can be tied together pretty easily.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. For those of you who don't know Sherry, Sherry is an American Zen student and teacher for the past 25 years plus. She's the author of more than 15 books, including There Is Nothing Wrong With You. And Sherry has a new website as well, so please check that out. That website is www.sherryhuber.com. And I was thinking about the show this past week, and it was really interesting, subject of dissatisfaction. And a couple things came to mind. One that I found particularly interesting is that our focus goes from job to relationship to where we're living. And so, in a sense, it's like we don't see the bigger picture of the process of that.
That we don't see the process of dissatisfaction. Because we believe each time we're in one of those, that that's really, we always believe that it's the content, right? We always believe that it's this job. If this job were different, then I would be happy. You know, that's kind of a joke around the Zen Center. It's whatever it is. As soon as I get that, as soon as I fix that, as soon as I change that, then I'll be happy. And when we pay attention to that, we see that the content changes, but the process is the same. So what I'm dissatisfied about is different. Now it's the job. Now it's the relationship. Now it's where I live. But the process of dissatisfaction remains the same. I don't like this. I'm not happy with this. If only this were different, then my life would work. Then I'd be happy.
Yeah. And it seems, in my experience at least, I get so drawn by the particular content. This relationship is not working, and it sort of consumes my whole attention and experience, and it's hard to see beyond that.
Yeah, because there's so much to go over, right? It's not working because of these things, and I'm unhappy with it because of these things, and I would like to change all of these things. And shall we negotiate this or not? And are you really willing to do that? But I'm not sure that I'm that into it. Or I'm really interested in working on this, but you don't seem to be really available. So the content is so varied that, as you indicate, we can just, we could call it fascinated or obsessed or bogged down in, depending on where we are in the process, for a really long period of time. Because by the time I get through all of my this and this and this and this and this, I can go right back to the beginning and start through them again.
Exactly.
And then, once I get tired of that, either now I've gotten rid of this relationship and I'm not going to have another one, or I've gotten rid of this relationship and I'm going to have another one, and now it's time to turn my attention to the job. And exactly what is it about this job that isn't working? Because until we catch on to dissatisfaction as a kind of in the background, background music. Dissatisfaction is the background music of our lives. And it's always, the voices are always there angling for, well, that's not quite right. I don't really like that. I don't, why do they, you know, that muttering and grumbling and whining that all of us do and that we're taught to feel bad about ourselves for doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the sort of music in the elevator.
Yeah.
Where you go into a restaurant and there's sort of this gentle music playing in the background. And
yeah.
Always something there
working
on us.
Yeah, so if I have a moment between distractions, what I'm probably going to tune in on is this in my head of all of the things that are wrong, what I don't like, what isn't working. If there isn't anything wrong right now, if there isn't something that's not working right here, well, I can go back to the past because there certainly have been a lot of things that haven't worked in the past. Or I could project out into the future all of the things that are going to go wrong. And we can begin to notice as we pay more attention that the mind, the conditioned mind, is constantly scanning for what's wrong, constantly feeding that dissatisfaction.
Yes, and it's always me, how does this relate to me? Is this going to help me? Is this going to hurt me? Am I going to be better? Am I going to be worse?
Yeah, yeah. What should I do? How can I solve this problem? What did I do about that? Was it the right thing? Was it the wrong? Is this going to be a mistake? I don't know. And as I'm fond of endlessly pointing out, the net result of that is I'm the center of the universe. Everything comes back to me all the time.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, well, yes. Seeing it is wonderful.
When you can get to that place where it's wonderful,
then
it gets interesting.
Yes, exactly. And as long as, of course, that's the whole point of what we look at in something like awareness practice. As long as we're focused on what's wrong, either the externals that we've been talking about, the job, the relationship, the whatever, that's wrong, I'm going to be in suffering. If I turn that into, oh, what is wrong with me that I'm dissatisfied all the time, then that becomes the source of suffering. And as you indicate, when we become interested in that whole thing as a process, you know, the way we like to talk about it, how we cause ourselves to suffer, then we have a chance of not taking that personally, realizing that this is a conditioned human being orientation to life, and we can start getting interested in, wow, well, now how does that process work? Then I have a chance of tuning into that voice and thinking, oh, you know, it's just always there. It is. It's like music. It's always playing. So what might it be like if I didn't respond to that, or if I brought it up into a place of conscious awareness so it's not just somebody in the background whining and nagging all the time? I actually turn my attention to it. What might my life be like if I weren't subjected to this subliminal litany of what's wrong all the time?
Yeah, what's possible?
What's possible, exactly. So what's possible this evening?
What's possible this evening is for those of you listening locally in the Bay Area or further away if you're catching us live over the internet, if this sounds as exciting to you as it does to me, please pick up your phone, give us a call. Our number here at the station is 650-723-9010. And I'd like to go ahead and bring our first caller on the line.
Hi, this is Rebecca.
Hi, Rebecca.
Welcome to our show.
Thank you. From Texas. Hi,
Jerry. From Texas, my goodness.
Yeah. And I'm just so thrilled that you're doing this program, and I'm looking forward to hearing many weeks.
Good.
Well, and I wanted to... One of the things that listening to your conversation brought up was how the holidays are beginning to kind of lead me right into some suffering.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I've been noticing is how I'm kind of gearing up. I'm going to in-law's house and, you know, and taking a few days off of work. And that's always a hard transition of how to slow down.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole idea that what is going to be the right experience of Christmas, you know?
Ooh, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
The right experience. What is the right experience? And it's not just Christmas, is it?
Oh, right.
It seems to be kind of amplified at Christmas time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because everybody's expectations are so high. You know,
through the roof.
And we got movie after movie and song after song that is just laying out what the right experience is going to be.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and if we're not having the Miracle on 34th Street or the, what's the other one that...
It's a Wonderful Life.
And if we're not having A Wonderful Life at Christmas time, then there really is something wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, and one of the things that, you know, you're talking about the process, and one of the things that I noticed just as I was listening to the intro, I was reflecting on, so I worked this morning and took half a day off, and now I'm on vacation. And the morning meetings that I had went really well, and there was this little part of me that was like, oh, I just love working. It's so good. And I bet you know what followed.
Uh-huh. Well, I can guess.
Well, it was this, oh, and the holidays, I'm just going to be a couch potato, and I'm going to be so lazy, and it's going to be so miserable, and I just, you know, and then just yesterday it was, oh, I can't wait to get off of work and be have no pressure, and no, you know, so it's dissatisfaction is what it is.
Yeah, and so I was picturing if you said to your the part of you who said, you know, isn't work wonderful, and you say, well, let's just not take off for Christmas then. Let's just work right on straight through and get way ahead. And you can imagine, or I can imagine, that there would be a very different story in a hurry.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that didn't feel like a setup at the time.
No, it doesn't, does it?
Yeah.
So what you're pointing at is so important for all of us, because we have all these different aspects of our personality. And depending on who's there, we are identified with that part of ourselves. And it's not like an aspect of my personality is talking. It's me.
Yeah.
I'm talking. I love work. I love it. I don't want to take this time off and just go there and have that couch potato take over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a kind of a, you know, an up and at 'em and in charge sort of a high-powered person. That's who I am.
Yeah.
So when I hear that voice inside my head, I think, yeah, well, that's right. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it doesn't feel like a setup, right?
Yeah.
But you, it sounds like you've been watching for a little while.
Right.
So you suspect a setup even when it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and just listening to the to your talking about the dissatisfaction being the music in the background kind of triggered it just tonight. I was like, oh, yeah, that's what triggered the kind of the downhill slope I've been feeling all day.
Uh-huh.
You know, the slippery slope into this isn't going to be right.
Yeah, you're not going to have the right experience. You're not going to be the right person. It's the in-laws, so we can count on them not being the right people, right? And so, yeah. So
no, it's going to be the TV on all the time. That's what it's going to attack,
uh-huh.
You know, and all of that.
Yeah, because they're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know, I participated in your online class, and you talked about always a physical sensation before the thought,
mm-hmm.
that precedes the I love working thought. And so I was looking at that, just, you know, and it felt like I remember a kind of a physical, I don't know how to explain it, just maybe a well-being kind of sensation, maybe in the heart chakra area.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and I guess I'm wondering, is that perhaps what you're pointing at that triggers the thought?
Well, it certainly could be.
Yeah.
In my experience, there is nothing that triggers negativity, dissatisfaction, self-hatred, all of those kinds of things, quite as fast as a feeling of well-being, which, you know, logically doesn't make sense. And yet if we pay attention, that's often the trigger. So one of the most common experiences in this culture is summed up with this expression, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Which to me is what you're describing. So this is great, and what follows that immediately is that this can't last. So then, of course, conditioned mind starts scanning around for, okay, this isn't going to last. Well, now what's wrong? There's, you know, it's kind of like a door has opened, and all of that conditioned thinking just comes right on through that door. So these are the expectations. This is the way it's probably going to go. I know how this is going to go. I mean, these are my in-laws. I know these people. I know that television is going to be blaring. I know that I'm just going to sit on the couch, and I'm going to eat too much, and I'm not going to exercise, and I'm going to hate the whole experience. It's all set up before you even get in the car and start the drive there. Yeah.
And so the waiting for the other shoe to drop, or in my mind, it's always, well, what comes up must come down. You know, there's
uh-huh.
that. So that's kind of the underlying belief that opens the door for all of this.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so without that kind of belief, I wonder what your life would look like. You know, we assume, because we don't pay real close attention, that we have the beliefs we have because of the experiences that we have had. But it's just not true. When we start looking a little closer, we begin to suspect that we have the life experience we have because of the beliefs that we hold.
Wow. Yeah.
Right? So if I believe something, that's what I'm going to see. And if I see it, that's going to confirm the belief. And it's a very difficult loop for us to get out of, because how do you not see something that you're seeing?
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a great deal of open-mindedness to open ourselves to the possibility that the life experience I'm having because I'm actually creating it. I'm actually projecting it. So I go into a situation with a particular attitude, and that situation confirms that I was right to have that attitude. Now, somebody else can go into that situation right with me, and they have a completely different experience. So, and you've probably had that happen, certainly with a partner.
Oh, yeah.
Because you go there, and your partner has a completely different experience of these people than the one that you have. And then we'd say, well, yeah, but you're used to them. That, you know, there really is something wrong with these people, but you're just used to them. And now that I look a little closer, the same things are wrong with you. So no wonder you fit in there and I don't. And why are we together anyway?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there it is. We're right back in the content.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of the fun awareness game that we can all play, all right, I'm going to go into this situation focused on not who they are and what they're doing, but what I'm bringing to this. So what kind of beliefs and assumptions can I uncover in this? So we've gotten a couple just in this conversation, right? TVs and Christmas don't really go together.
Mm-hmm.
TVs blaring don't fit in with family gatherings.
Yeah.
Sitting on the couch makes you a potato, and that's not a good thing. Yeah, working is far superior to sitting on the couch. So, you know, there are just three or four that are interesting to explore. What if none of that's true?
Yeah.
And even if it is all true, what if you can suspend all of that for a few days and call it a vacation?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Perish the thought.
Yeah, what a notion.
Well, my family will thank you, because I'm sure I'll be much less of a dictator if I can manage to suspend that. And it'll be, it's much more compassionate for me, too.
Oh, yeah.
To be the dictator.
Oh, absolutely. So what, you know, the way I talk about it is, it's a retreat. It's a workshop. And the good news is, you've already paid for it. Right, you've already paid for it. You went out and bought your presents and did all of those things. So now you just go there and you have a little workshop called Christmas with the Family. And you get to watch how you cause yourself to suffer so that you can let that go and just have a good time.
That's very good.
Is our wish for you this holiday season, that you go there and have the holiday of your life.
Good luck with your program.
Thanks. Let us know.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. Yes, it is our wish that you all have a wonderful holiday season. And, Sherry, it's really fascinating what you were talking about there, the concept of projection and how it's so hard for us to see that.
It is. One of the things that helps us out is that it's much easier for us to see what other people are doing than to see what we're doing. So if we catch on to something like projection, if we start watching to see what people are bringing to a situation, how they bring themselves to it, and then they just see themselves in everything, we can observe others doing that and then perhaps slowly let it dawn on us that we're probably doing the same thing.
Yeah, because it seems obvious in a lot of cases, looking at people in certain situations, we can see what they're bringing to the situation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My teacher used to say, your mind precedes you into the room. So somebody walks in, and we can see a lot of attitudes, beliefs, assumptions, that sort of thing, just in the way they enter the room. Well, the same thing may be true for us.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it occurred to me, sort of, it seems hard to see that projection sometimes with ourselves and with people who are very close to us.
Yes.
And it occurred to me that one way, I'm not sure if I've tried this before, but for example, sitting in the airport or sitting in the mall, watching people walk by, it's possible to pay attention and see what beliefs come up as you just sort of glance at people.
Yes. Yeah. So what are the judgments that arise? The liking and the disliking. I approve of that. Oh, that's an attractive person. Oh, that isn't an attractive person. And we do that kind of thing assuming that we are tapping into some sort of truth or reality rather than we're just tapping into our own conditioned opinions. Now,
yes.
I realize that for a lot of people that's kind of an offensive statement. Because part of our conditioning is to believe that we are free thinkers. We are conditioned to believe that we are free thinkers.
Yes.
So most of us growing up are completely conditioned by our families. We're taught, you know, what's good, bad, right, wrong, pretty ugly, necessary, not, frivolous, important. And then we hit puberty. And we decide that our parents are completely messed up. And so we tend to go to the opposite opinion. So if my parents are really into junk food, then I'm going to eat health food. If my parents are really responsible, I'm going to be irresponsible. If they save money, I'm going to fritter money. I'm not even going to have any money. So we go from one side of a continuum to the other and feel like we're really thinking for ourselves.
Yes.
When all we've done is go into reaction. So to actually what you're pointing at with the airport thing is taking responsibility for seeing my conditioned responses. So I sit there and I watch all of these opinions come up, and if I'm honest, I will say to myself, I'll ask myself questions like, well, how do you know that? Or why do you think that? Or where is that coming from? And it's a wonderful way to get to see my conditioning and then question whether I really want to stick with these opinions or if I, in fact, would like to be a free thinker.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am. You're listening to Open Air on KZSU Stanford. My name is Michael Gray. I'm here tonight with Sherry Huber, and we're talking with people about coming home for the holidays. If you'd like to join our discussion, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010, and we'll be back in just one moment. And we're back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're talking tonight about dissatisfaction. And
coming home for the holidays.
You're right. Dissatisfaction was last week, wasn't it?
Well, the two topics can kind of oftentimes, for many of us, bleed together in an awareness-producing sort of a way.
Yes. And for me, dissatisfaction is sort of a daily practice of mine.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm excited because we have another caller on the line from Arizona. I'd like to welcome Jean to our show.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Doing well, and yourself?
I'm pretty good.
Very good.
The thing that I've been looking at lately is that with the whole, well, in the last 2 years, like the whole cast of characters in my life has really changed because of death or divorce or people moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself this holiday being really sad because I miss these folks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it's true that I'm really sad or if I'm just causing myself to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And the Zen student inside of me says things like, you know, you should live in the moment. You shouldn't be thinking about people who are dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, that in itself is sad, isn't it? So clearly, from what you've said, you're attempting to bring conscious awareness to your life, right? Because you know the right answer is live in the present moment.
Exactly.
Boy, do we all know that. And so instead of being something that we are attempting to do on a moment-by-moment basis, it gets to be another stick that we get beaten with, right? Something that's used against us. And sadly, we believe that that process is somehow spiritual. So if somebody were beating you up because you just ate French fries, or because you forgot to make your car payment, or something like that, it would be a little harder to make a case that this is a spiritual issue. We could say it's a, well, we're trying to make you a good, responsible person. But that's not the same as spiritual, right? But now it's got the language of you should live in the present. And this is a big weapon to use against you, right? But, of course, in the way I talk about it, it's all self-hate. It's just all self-hatred. And the content of it doesn't matter. There's not non-spiritual self-hatred and spiritual self-hatred, okay? So that, I find that comforting. So that whole mess of talk can actually just be jettisoned. Not that you can actually do that, but if you could say, you know, we can just cut all of that loose because that doesn't have anything to do with anything. So, because as long as that self-hatred is active, you will be beaten up over whatever.
Yeah, you're right.
Right? Yeah. So, this is something that it can get you on, and so it does. Yeah, so now we've tossed that out as irrelevant. And then we just get to, and so here you are, and in you are in the present. And in the present, you're really missing people who have left your life in one way or another. Yeah, because this whole season is about being together, isn't it? Yeah, so I was doing a workshop a couple of weeks ago, and for some reason got off, maybe because the holidays were coming, and I was telling people that my mother died very suddenly when I was 18, and she died in the end of October, and so here, a month later, I am faced with Christmas, and my own personal hell was captured by the song, I'll Be Home for Christmas. I mean, it was horrible. Every time I would hear that song, the thing that I got was, there is no home. There, home is gone. Home is gone. My mother is gone. My family is gone. It's all over. And the thing that I realized in that is that when we lose somebody, we don't just lose them in the past. Right? We don't just lose our past with them. We lose our future with them.
Well, and that's what I've noticed is that, because I've been looking at this, like, what is going on? Why is it this sudden melancholy? And why am I missing these books? And I find that it's when, because I'm not with the same people, I'm also not with the same traditions. And I'm kind of at loose ends. There are lots of times when I think, okay, what do I do now? And it's kind of like when there's that openness and that space, I find I really miss these folks because they kind of filled that space for me.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's kind of like that. And what will I do next year and the year after?
Yeah. You know. Yeah, because, you know, whether it's death or divorce or however the loss occurs, all the dreams die as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a hard time. And of course, those of us, you know, on this side of the holidays understand that. You know, the holidays aren't a happy, little, wonderful life vignette for an awful lot of us. And yet, that's such a small part of what's presented to us through the media and, you know, all the hype to boost the economy with getting out there and buy, buying. You know, the kind of thing that we're talking about doesn't sell. And so let's just, you know, let's just focus on what a good time we're all having. And then if you're not in that we're having a good time club, it's like, you know, it's like a double dose.
Well,
you're not having the right experience, and you're left out of the group of people who are having the right experience.
And this year, I kind of just said, okay, fine, I'm not going to be in the group of people who are having the happy holidays feelings. And that, I don't know, I don't think that bothers me as much. The thing that gets me is just that sadness of missing people. And trying to figure out, like, I laughed at myself before I called you because I thought, my question is, Sherry, what do I do about this?
That's
I already
always,
know your answer.
Yeah. Well, now, let me ask you this. If somebody else were in your situation, what would you tell that person?
I would probably quote you and say, there's nothing to do or not to.
Mm-hmm. But now, where does that leave the person with their sadness?
Mm-hmm. Just sad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it's your best friend, if it's your... whoever it is, somebody that you love unconditionally, and they're just sad. Because they're sad.
Yeah.
Because these people are gone, and she doesn't want them to be gone, and they are, and that's just how it is. So you would just let her be sad when she's sad.
Yeah, I would probably say just be sad. It's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And probably in that kind of acceptance, one of the things that you would both become aware of pretty quickly is, she's not sad all the time.
No. Uh-uh.
Because the sadness arises, and then it passes through and passes away, and then there's whatever is there now.
Yeah.
And then you hear a song, or you see a this or a that or whatever, and the sadness arises again.
Yeah.
And if you can just let it be there, then in a little while, it'll pass through, and you'll be on to the next thing. Which to me is the difference between pain and suffering. That pain is there when it arises in the moment. The suffering is what happens when we start telling ourselves the story.
Right.
When we drag it out. When we make it personal. When we make it mean something. That's when we can turn it into a suffering that goes way beyond this moment and into the next one and the next one and the next one and the next one and kind of into forever.
Oh, boy, yeah. Mm. I can see how I do that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we all do.
I mean, I'm glad I have company.
Yeah, it is the nature of conditioning to do that, to turn everything into a story, make everything mean something, to take it into the past, into the future, anywhere outside the moment,
mm-hmm.
right? Because... that's where the suffering is. And again, if we can just be in the present, really, really be here,
mm-hmm.
and allow things to be what they are, it's amazing how quickly things change. Kind of like being with a 3-year-old, you know? Boy, I'm unhappy now, and I'm really unhappy and screaming and yelling and wailing, and then the next moment,
mm-hmm.
something happened that I like, and now I'm happy. And as adults... we're taught to believe that that's shallow or insincere in some way. But I think it has more to do with authenticity. That's more a matter of responding to what's authentically going on with us, rather than dragging out a story.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, well, take good care of yourself through this season.
I think I will.
Good. I think you will, too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jean, for joining us tonight. It was great to have you on the air. Sherry, a couple things about that really struck me. One is how those voices can take over our awareness practice.
Oh, yeah.
And use them against us.
Yeah, and feel it feels as if they're kind of determined to do that. So if you decide to take up a meditation practice, and you read all of the instructions about how to meditate, that conditioned mind is reading the instructions too. And so as soon as you internalize how to sit and what you're going to pay attention to and kind of why you're doing it, conditioned mind has that to use against you. Well, you weren't very focused. Well, that wasn't a very good meditation. Well, you weren't concentrated at all.
That wasn't very spiritual, what you said.
That wasn't very spiritual. Exactly. So conditioned mind immediately becomes an expert on whatever you're doing, and its expertise, and of course that's in quotes, its expertise simply means now I have some more information to use against you.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. The other thing that struck me about that is that, and this is sort of one of those paradoxical Zen statements, being aware is not a miracle. In other words, my life continues.
Yes, right.
And it is a miracle.
And it is a miracle.
At another level.
Yes. So what a lot of people, of course, who want to practice awareness, want to practice it so that they can be perfect, so that nothing will ever go wrong, they'll never have another accident or lose money, because if you're living in the moment, then somehow life becomes perfect. And what you're indicating is my experience as well. Life does become perfect, not because the content changes, not because the externals change, but because I'm present to it. I'm not believing the stories. I'm not suffering over unexamined beliefs and assumptions. I'm actually here in a compassionate, understanding relationship with the human being who's trying to live this life. That's what makes it perfect.
Exactly. Our relationship to it changes.
Yes. Yeah. The conditioning goes right on. Most people experience the voices go right on. In Zen, we have this expression called going farther and faring worse. And that's what happens to us when we start paying attention, we're doing our awareness practice, and we really get how bad it is. We hear those voices, we hear the cruelty, the abuse that's in them. We're still in the stage where perhaps we're taking them personally. You know, these are my voices, as if I have some control. What is the matter? I should stop this. Oh my gosh, I'm a horrible person. Going farther, faring worse. If we stay the course, then we move into a place of realizing this is the human condition. Everybody has these voices. 90% of the time, they're cruel. And that's just how it is. I don't have to believe it. I don't have to take it on. I don't have to be in relationship to that. I don't have to be in reaction to it. It's like Muzak. It can just play.
Muzak.
Hateful Muzak. Right? It can just play along. And I'm free to attend to other things. And, of course, the thing that I encourage people to attend to is to come back to the breath and the kindness that is here and available to us in this moment.
Isn't this great stuff? I hope you're enjoying this. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're on KZSU at 90.1 FM. You can hear us over the internet as well at kzsulive.stanford.edu. And we'll be back in just one moment. And we're back. You're listening to Open Air on KZSU Stanford. We've been talking about coming home for the holidays, as well as dissatisfaction, and lots of other wonderful topics. And we have our next caller on the line from Santa Barbara. I'd like to welcome Jody to our show. Hi, Jody.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I'm good, except for now I'm starting to think about being home for the holidays, and it makes me feel less good. And when I think about going, it's not just for the holidays, but when I think about going home in general, I get this sick, nauseous, twisted feeling in the pit of my stomach, and then I want to make my hands into little fists and get into a fighting mode,
mm-hmm.
to a fighting stance. I'm ready to fight back. And a lot of what you said to the first and second caller really rang true for me. Mostly, there are two specific things. One is that people react to the situations that they're in, and that people don't have exact free thought. And I definitely am an overreaction to everything that happens at home when I'm with my parents.
Uh-huh.
I'm exactly the opposite. I mean, I'm as stubborn as my dad is, but I'm the exact opposite of a personality. If he says yin, then I will scream, no way, it's yang.
Uh-huh.
So, and I turn into this 12-year-old as soon as I go back home.
That was my next question. I was going to ask you, how old do you feel emotionally when you're there?
Oh,
12.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Uh-huh.
It's terrible. Yeah, I've got so much baggage. And I'm also, the other thing that you said that really resonates with me is the difference between in pain and suffering. And it's definitely suffering. It's not just when I'm there, but, you know, even thinking about getting a phone call, or are talking about it now, and I'm like ready to fight right mm-hmm. now.
And do you know what that's about?
Why I have this?
Yeah. Well, kind of. It sounds like there's an assumption that you're going to be attacked.
Oh yeah.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is
it's emotional attack. It's not physical attack, but it's definitely emotional attack. And that I'm standing up and saying, no, I'm right. I'm not dumb. I'm smart, and I know what I'm saying, and it's factual, and it's rationally based instead of emotionally based, and so that I'm defending myself from being vulnerable to emotions.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't trust your emotions with these people.
Oh no.
Uh huh. Yeah. 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 And so this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with projection, doesn't it? It's hard to know exactly what's going on, isn't it? Because you bring this pugilistic attitude to the situation. It's hard to know whether you are defending yourself and they are attacking, mm-hmm. or it feels to them that you are attacking and they have to defend.
Yeah.
And their defense then looks like an attack.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we have the Middle East.
Yeah, it's definitely really, it absolutely is. And I'm doing some family history right now, creating a genealogy, and it's opened the door for us to start to have a little bit of a discussion and asking my mom, saying, why don't you ever tell me about, when you were young, and asking my dad, about his past, and apparently, his parents he knows nothing about his family. He's trying to figure out, what was my dad's middle name? I don't know. And he doesn't know his grandparents' names. There's no family history there, and so everything was definitely very closed off before, and so I'm learning that where their baggage comes from, and so it's not that I'm creating all of this from scratch.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's just passed down, isn't it? So we don't know what their names are, but we can guess what their conditioning was.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it helps so much, and this gets back to another thing that you said, that it's part of the human condition,
mm-hmm.
because operating in a vacuum. I really was operating in a vacuum. If there's really no response, a healthy response to emotions, or being able to talk openly about communication problems, then you feel like you're isolated.
Sure.
Another problem that this relates to in society in general is that we shield ourselves so much from the negative. So my friends or my colleagues or someone is having some kind of negative problem, we hide it from our friends, and we always put our best face forward.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We don't get that experience of seeing, what happens when you fail, and how do you embarrass yourself when you're trying to get a date, or, what kind of human experiences do you go through?
Yeah.
And so it's so, kind of lacking.
Yeah, and we all feel like we're the only one having the experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, when, in fact, we're all having exactly the same experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like your parents are pretty open to all of this.
How so?
Well, that they're exploring. Your dad wonders about his family, and your mom is kind of open to talking about what happened with her.
Not really.
You drag it out of them.
No, they're not really very open to talking about. The past is pretty painful for them,
uh-huh.
especially for her. It's very painful for her. And so attempting to open that up is really a big can of worms that she doesn't want to go into. She's in a very fragile, emotional person. Her past was so shattering and so destroying that she really is just a shell of who she could and should be. And so
mm-hmm.
she doesn't want to – that would be very dangerous
uh-huh.
territory for her.
Let me ask you this. Do you think your parents love you?
I do.
And do you love them?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I know I love my mom, and I know deep down that I love my dad, but I don't like him very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just had this little fantasy going on that, when you're there for the holidays and you and your dad start getting into it, that as it begins to heat up, you just stop and take a deep breath and look across at him and say, Dad, I love you.
That would be opening myself up to so much vulnerability.
Yeah, it would. But here's the magic of it. If you could do that, if you could actually pull that off, you wouldn't be vulnerable at all.
That's true.
Yeah, because you would be in a place of being present, being, as we talk about it, centered, right? You would be there for you, right? You wouldn't be a little, you wouldn't be 12 years old. You would be a grown-up.
Mm-hmm.
You would be stepping outside of the whole family dynamic and just cutting to the chase. Okay, this is what's really true, Dad. You know, we could argue until you die of old age, but here's the deal. Here's the part I really want you to know. I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can go back to arguing,
mm-hmm.
But let's just make that clear. Can
wow.
you picture it?
I can see that it's possible, but that would be really hard.
Yeah.
It'd be really, really hard.
Yep. Yeah. Here's the thing, though, and I'm not saying you should do it. I'm
uh-huh.
just posing it as an interesting possibility.
Uh-huh.
That it would be really, really hard, but I wonder if it would be any harder than the amount of suffering that's currently going on.
Yeah, the last time that I spent any real time with them, it moved enough towards great suffering for me that I felt I couldn't continue this way, that there has to be a change, and if it's bringing the situation to a head or going in some other direction, it's an anguish for
yeah.
me to deal with my parents, and it's incredibly sad, you
yes.
know? I don't have kids, but if I had kids, especially grown children, then I would feel horrible about the fact that I didn't have a good relationship with my
yeah.
children.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it seems to me that all relationships come down to the same thing. One, we want to be loved, and we feel misunderstood. You know, so I'm your mother. I love you. I want you to love me. You don't understand me. I don't understand you.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of going to the thing that we have in common, which is that we love each other,
uh-huh.
we get bogged down in all of this content. Well, you think that and you act that way and I don't understand why you and well, you this and you that. And, you know, we very seldom make I statements.
Uh-huh.
We just point the finger. You know, I talk about it as you and I have a problem, and so we sit, you know, we walk into the living room, and you sit on one side of the living room, and I sit on the other, and we put our problem between us. And then
uh-huh.
we point our fingers of blame and fault across that problem at one another,
uh-huh.
instead of looking to see, now, what do I really want out of this? Do
uh-huh.
I really want to be right here, or do I want my child to love me? Do I want to be the one who knows, or do I want a good relationship with my child?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I have to look at what the answer is. If I want to be right, well, okay, then, you know, I can die right with a child who is estranged from me and gets knots in her stomach when she thinks about having a conversation with me. Or I can say, you know, I don't care about being right. I would like to have a loving relationship with my child. And, you know, as the child, you can do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just something to think about. So
no, it sounds right.
Yeah.
It's a really hard situation. It's emotionally hard to
yeah.
think about doing anything about
yep.
it because it's been, I'm 28 years old, and so it's been
yep.
28 years of this building up that
yep.
it's going to take a lot of strength to be able to turn that around.
Yep. Maybe. I want you to be open to the possibility that it might be as easy to turn around as a simple I love you.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Just
Great.
Something to consider.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jody, thanks for joining us tonight. It's a fascinating discussion. And what struck me about that is my experience with awareness practice is that it's possible to go in small steps.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's
a very good point. There are a lot of steps between we are on the verge of being estranged and Ozzy and Harriet.
Yes, mm-hmm. and I can see sort of a direction I'd like to be moving in,
mm-hmm.
and what small step feels okay to me today.
Yeah, yeah.
To go in that direction.
The argument for just jumping in is that sometimes those small steps can just prolong the agony. You
yeah.
know, that if we, yeah. it's like, you're in your country and I'm in mine and our people have been killing each other forever and, you know, I'm right and you're wrong and you're in the same position. At some point, somebody has to say, okay, I give up. What I want is peace. Now, I might go to my grave believing that I'm right, But that misses the point. I want peace. I want the killing to stop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff. And we have one more caller waiting, and we'll be back in just a moment with him. Hold on, and we'll be right back. And we're back. That's my favorite line.
Yeah.
And we're back. Thank you, Sherry. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we're talking about coming home for the holidays. And I'd like to welcome our next caller from Kentucky, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi, Sherry. I'd like to talk about when I come home for the holidays. I think that my family is the place I should feel most intimate, or with my friends, you know, that I've grown up with. I should feel the closest to them, but
yeah.
I come back and I just feel even more distant because I've been practicing really hard, like, in a residential place, and I just feel like I don't relate to people in the same way that I used to, and mm-hmm. I'm not willing to be codependent or distract myself with television for hours, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I just don't know how to develop a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I, like, that was unhealthy at one point, and still is.
Uh-huh. And do you kind of, do you have the experience that Jody was mentioning, that you go back there and instead of being the grown-up man that you are now, you turn into a little kid?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's rough. I talk to the monks about that at our monastery a lot, that people will come to the monastery and they'll be there for a year. And their lives are transformed, and
yeah.
everything is open, and their hearts are open,
yeah.
and then they go home, and they're six, and they're just...
Where'd my heart go?
Yeah, and just...
What happened to that faith?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yes, and that's the experience, isn't it? Now, it seems to me that there are two ways to approach this. One is to feel like there's something wrong with it, and to be completely miserable. And the other way is to say... Wow, conditioning is real. This is big, and it's a lot to go up against. And I'm probably not going to be completely successful the first time around. Okay? Which to me argues for that attitude of, I'm going home. This is going to be a workshop.
Okay.
Instead of, I'm going home.
I should
have it right. Yeah, you're living somewhere, right, where you're devoting yourself to this stuff full time. So, I mean, you, above all other people, should have this down.
Right.
Ha. Yeah, and it's just not that way. Now, I don't know what practice you do, but in the practice that I do, it comes down to this. Compassion, no matter what. And it's not compassion for this guy when he's doing everything right. It's compassion when he is doing his very best and struggling hideously. That's when the compassion comes in. It's not like having compassion for yourself that you're not able to be successful at this in a way that meets conditioning standards means that you will stop trying so hard. Okay? You can go there and you can be filled with sympathy for how hard it is to go beyond our childhood conditioning, and you will leave that place more devoted to your spiritual practice than you were when you arrived there.
Well, what happens is that my childhood conditioning starts to do the practice.
Oh,
and so
yes.
I'm not sure that it's like I get stuck there, because
yep.
then you either don't do the practice or it's the childhood conditioning, and it's like,
yeah. And so,
where to go?
So, well, there is somewhere to go, and that is to do the very best that you can to keep coming back to the moment. Do you come back to the breath?
Yes.
Yeah. So, coming back to the breath, being right here, watching what arises, watching what pulls you off, watching the voices that come up, how you go into suffering, take a deep breath, come back to the moment
okay.
over and over and over and over again, every moment. And, you know,
tight knot on that handkerchief.
Yes, yes, exactly so. Yeah. And so this could be your mantra. You're doing a good job. You're doing a good job. You're doing a good job. Hang in there. You're doing a good job. You're doing a good job. Okay? Instead of what the voices are probably saying to you, which is, this is what you're doing. This is what, why'd you say that? Why'd you do that? I can't believe you had that reaction. How long have you been doing spiritual practice? Why are you wasting your time living in that place if this is the way you're going to be? What are people going to,
What a good example.
Yeah. That voice of self-hatred, you know, it doesn't have any good information for you. It really doesn't. Because if you, here's the bottom line. If you went there and you were the perfect bodhisattva, that you are the enlightened being dropped into these people's living room, and you came out of that thinking, hot dog, I am good, you would be a danger to all of us. Can you see that? Yeah, so you've met all of conditioning standards, and your ego is totally inflated. Uh-huh. What do you have? But to go into that and see how hard it is, don't you come out of it having a lot more compassion for people because they're not perfect by somebody's standards of the perfect spiritual person? When you get it, how hard it is, you can see how people struggle and suffer and want to be good and want to do it right and just run into this wall of conditioning. And they're completely frustrated and thwarted and feel like failures, and you just kind of want to put your arms around them and say, hey, let's focus on the effort. Let's not focus on the results. Maybe at some point the results will show up, but not because, hot dog, I'm good. But because, you know, I give up on the standards. I'm just going to try to bring as much conscious awareness as I can and as much compassion as I can muster to every moment of my life. It starts with me, and it extends out from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for everything.
Don't forget your mantra.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you, Jason, for joining us tonight. What a wonderful show.
I thought so, too.
I thought it was great.
What really thoughtful, hardworking, good folks.
Yes, I would agree.
And so often we see that level of sincerity, and as we saw with Jason, that level, that incredible level of sincerity, And the reward for that is constant beatings for not meeting the standards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Standards are always there.
Yeah.
Seems like.
Yeah. So maybe that would be a good mantra for all of us. You know, as we go through this very stressful time of year, you're doing a good job.
You're doing a good job.
Yeah, you're hanging in there. That was good.
Great.
See you next week.
See you on January 9th.
January 9th.
Is that next week? No, the following week.
Okay, we'll take a week off for the holidays.
We'll do a good job. Let everybody integrate all this.
Yeah, and then we'll be back on the 9th.
Wonderful. Sherry, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Lori.
Thanks to our callers from all across the country. Thanks to our listeners in the Bay Area, and I'm sure all across the country as well.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Lori. And I'd like to thank all the folks at KZSU who have helped to get us on the air. As I just mentioned, we'll be on again on Thursday, January 9th at 5 p.m. Pacific time. If you're in the Bay Area, you'll find us at 90.1. If you're further away, fire up your computer and point your browser to kzsulive.stanford.edu. If you'd like to be a caller on a future show, please give us a call here at the station at 650-723-9010, or you can send me an email to M as in Michael, Gray, G-R-A-Y, at kzsu.org. Next up on KZSU is Gabe, so please hang in there.